forester, I'm used to dealing with the whole tree. So I got the whole tree standing there. I got leaves or needles. I got twigs. I got bark. I got the general form of the tree. I got where it is. I mean, it should be really easy then. But, you know, as you go further and further removed from the entire tree, it becomes more and more difficult. But, so, while we're talking, I'm going to pass some of these around. These are tree cookies from where I used to work. And you can take a look at them, see if you can figure out what they are. And at the end here, I'll read off the answers. So they have a letter on them. You can write down what your guess is, and then you can find out if you're right or not. So there's one right there. Anyway, the trees of Minnesota are generally broken down into two groups, conifers and the hardwoods or deciduous trees. And, you know, there's a problem right at the very beginning with terminology, because people go softwoods, hardwoods. But that is not really correct, because some hardwoods are soft and some softwoods are hard. It doesn't say anything about the relative impact resistance of the wood. So conifers is a little better description for that group, so that's what we'll use. In Minnesota, we're blessed with two kinds of cedar, red cedar and white cedar. Generally, white cedar is the tree that you'll find up in northern Minnesota, growing in the swamps. And red cedar is the brushy tree that you often find on south slopes down in this end of the state. One grows in swampy conditions. The other one grows on dry, rocky south slopes. So they're just like polar opposites. And from a standpoint of their wood, like white cedar is a very light wood, doesn't have a lot of strength, but it's commonly been used in the past for like canoe construction, paddles, things of that nature. Red cedar, it's a tough tree to work with. They often grow like cones. They'll be this wide at the butt, 8 feet up there, they come to a point. They're kind of cone-shaped. And most of them don't even hardly make a fence post. You can occasionally find ones that are big enough to saw. And if you go down to like Tennessee or something, you can buy furniture that's made from red cedar. It does have the aromatic smell to it, you know, in the heartwood. The only issue is that the wood is kind of brittle and it tends to be difficult to work because it's so knotty. It really, you don't get a nice clear piece of red cedar. It just doesn't happen. And we have balsam fir, which is occasionally sawed, but most balsam fir gets turned into toilet paper. We'll see them down here as Christmas trees, but they're mostly found in northern Minnesota. Hemlock, very uncommon. You wouldn't find a sawable hemlock in the state, or most of them are going to be little dinky things. Occasionally you'll find them as you move east, northern peninsula of Michigan, northern Wisconsin, that country in the Great Lakes, and they get to be a pretty large tree over there, but we're too far west. Jack pine is very common in Minnesota. It's a really interesting tree to see. It has what are called serotinous cones, which are cones that have to be exposed to fire before the cones open up. So if you have jack pine in the area, you run a fire through the area, the cones will open up and release and spread, get a new crop of jack pine coming up. So that's why you see it up in the sand country up north, very common in the Boundary Waters and up into Canada. It occasionally gets big enough to saw. A lot of it gets turned into pulpwood.
Now up in Canada, when we were there a number of years ago on a fishing trip, there was they had taken all the trees down, and then they went in there with like a scarab, where it was a cat with a bunch of chains hanging on the back of it.
It's called a barrel scarifier. It's got big sharp tooth fins on the back, and you pull it behind the cat, and it rotates, and it digs gouges. See, most of the conifers need mineral soil contact for the seed to grow. And if you're going to seed, whether it's snowmobile seed or helicopter seed, you need to have bare ground for that seed to get in contact with and germinate and grow. And you know, you look at the seed from something like a jack pine. It's just a little tiny, tiny thing. And if you have too much vegetation on the ground, it never makes it in contact with the soil.
Now, when they were running that machine through there, did they bust up those cones adequately so they would
seed? Well, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll artificially seed following that activity. So sometimes in the winter, or sometimes from a helicopter, you know, they'll do it. Or they might run a fire through there, and there's cones in the slash, and as the fire burns the cones, then they open. You can do it at home. You take jack pine cones, you can put them on a cookie sheet, turn your oven up to 250 degrees, leave them in there for 10 or 15 minutes, and when you bring them, take them out, the cone is open, and you'll have jack pine cones laying on the cookie sheet. And they're good. You could plant them. Now, along with jack pine comes the really important ones for Minnesota, Norway pine and white pine. And Norway pine and white pine are the trees that pretty much built the state. South Dakota and North Dakota, because we send all of our lumber out there, and they built those states as well from our trees. And we have native white pine. You know, I think the Pine Island pine were white pine, I'm pretty sure. We don't see a lot of it down here.
How old can a white pine get?
Well, people would like you to believe that 400 or 500 years, but really a 200-year-old one is pretty old. Most of the stuff around here is anywhere from 80 to about 150, because they really get very large. They grow pretty fast, and they stick up above. They're called super canopy trees, because if you look off into the distance and you see something that's sticking up above, chances are good that it's a white pine. A lot of times you'll find wild turkeys down here will roost in white pine because they have those big, strong horizontal branches. They're just great for turkey roosts. The turkeys will just fly right up there and roost on them. And then we've got spruce, two different kinds of spruce. Black spruce, which is a swamp species in northern Minnesota. Probably as big as it ever gets is about yay big. Makes a real high grade paper. And also, along with that is the upland species of white spruce, which is commonly the windbreak tree that you'll see down here. In the old days, we have a naturalized species, which is Norway spruce. That is not a true native to Minnesota, but it's planted all over. And if you look around at the spruce trees in a lot of the old farmsteads, those are Norway spruce, more than likely.
Excuse me, is the Norway spruce got long needles on them?
No, the spruces are short.
Which is the pine trees have the long needles?
Well, white pine has long needles. Okay. Norway pine has long needles, and the white pine has needles in groups or fascicles of five, and they're fairly soft when you try and push against them, whereas the Norway pine is in groups of three, and they're stiffer and sharper. But the wood, basically a lot of these woods in the conifer group, they're very similar. They're really hard to tell apart. I mean, if you're going to turn something, and you've gone to the lumber yard, you'll see something called SPF stamped on some of that wood. Spruce, pine, fir. Any one of the group. They don't tell them apart. They don't care. It's all priced the same. So now we get to the interesting stuff, which is... Yes?
The white spruce, that's the one with the beautiful pyramidal point?
Generally, yes. Yeah.
That's so, what we found out from the headwaters of the Mississippi. That's what they said there.
There you go.
That was the white spruce, because it always...
Yeah. Well, it's not the only one that does that, but it's common. It's a common one that does that. Okay, now I'm going to just kind of talk about groups of species in the hardwood group. And we're really fortunate down here that we have hardwoods from northern Minnesota, we have hardwoods from the east, and hardwoods from the south. So this is the best part of the state for a variety of different kinds of wood. If you lived up in Grand Rapids, you'd have birch and black ash and some scabby maple, maybe a little red oak, but they just don't have, and of course popple, but they don't have the variety of trees that we have down here. We're really blessed. But to start off, there's ash, black, red, green, and white. Black ash is a swamp species in northern Minnesota. It generally grows kind of slow because it's often found in an actual swamp. So how can you tell a black ash? Your feet are wet. Now, down on this end of the state, we've got green ash and white ash, and I usually tell folks, you can tell a white ash because it's really a nice looking tree generally. That's the baseball bat ash. That's a common turner's wood. It turns nicely. It's got good strength to it. It generally doesn't have a lot of defects. Green ash, on the other hand, has a lot of the same characteristics but tends to be knottier. The form is poor. If you look at a green ash on a boulevard, which are they're very common boulevard trees, they're limby. Oftentimes they'll be forked, and they'll have split crotches. It's just kind of the way they grow. The white ash is more of a forest tree, so it tends to have a more of a central tendency and grow straighter. So it's easier to get a good billet, like to make a bat. But white ash is not the most common of the hardwoods. It's hard to find good ones. Now we come to the most common tree in the state. Aspen, big tooth, trembling. There's two species, and actually there's another one called Balm of Gilead, which you see up north. It's kind of a swamp aspen. Popple. Or aspen, same thing. It's a soft wood, and yet it pretty much makes the state because it's the most. I mean, there's aspen everywhere in the state of Minnesota, so it's out there. There's lots of it. Let's see, I gotta find a few.
Is that used for paper?
Oh yeah, primarily. A little bit of it's sawed. Go to Menards and buy the aspen stud now. But the thing with popple is it really has a lot of water in it. So as it dries, it wants to turn. And that's kind of a problem. Now basswood, which is I think a species that many of you have seen and some of you have worked with, that is a I think a fairly decent turning wood. It gets a little fuzzy, but it's soft and it gets a nice diameter, so you can get some good sized pieces. It was commonly used for utensils and bowls and things like that back in the day, and that's one that we have now. It's not a real long life tree, 50-60 years, and then they start to decline. So and they will reproduce from sprouts. So if you wanna, you shouldn't feel bad about cutting a basswood, because you'll probably get six back where you cut the one. Blue beech. Now that's a very interesting tree, because it's only just a little dinky thing about yay big, but it's got a real interesting look to the bole of the tree. It's also called muscle wood because it just looks like muscles being flexed in a stem. It's similar to ironwood, kind of grows in that forest understory. I'm sure for small projects, you know, things like your tops or anything that isn't real big, it would be nice. It would be real interesting. Let's see, what do we got here? Okay, birch. We've got paper birch, river birch, and yellow birch. And yellow birch has traditionally been used as a furniture wood. We don't have much of it around us. Here. It's a northern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, UP of Michigan type of tree. But it is a nice furniture wood. It takes stain real well. Paper birch, you'll see some of that around here. It's pretty much out throughout the entire state. You know, I was surprised at how nicely it turned out when Jim Sandrud, you know, had us working with those pieces of birch. I have never really thought much of birch as a wood, but I think there's more to it than that. I think most of you are familiar with it. River birch is another species that we have down here that they don't have in the rest of the state. You'll find it out in the river bottoms, the Mississippi, and occasionally planted as a boulevard tree. It's got that salmon or pinkish bark. So if you're looking at one and you're going, it looks like a paper birch, but the bark is pink, then you're looking at a river birch. But you can see them if you go to Bass Camp, north of Winona there, and look out through the bottoms, you can find a river birch down there. And it's pretty commonly planted as a boulevard tree.
Dave, what's the lifespan of a paper birch residential?
Well, it depends on the owner. You know, a lot of birches are really prone to what I call lawnmower disease. Because if you get out there with your weed whacker, or if you get out there with your riding lawnmower, and you're constantly butting into it, you're going to end up with a ring of rotten wood right at the ground line. And then they don't last too long, because birch is not a real rot-resistant wood. So in nature, given that it's healthy, 50, 60 years, is about what you're going to see.
Okay, I'm just thinking, because my house is about 55 years old, and I've got a birch that's...
declining?
Still alive, but...
Okay. A lot of times you just look at the crown and see if the crown is dying back a little bit. There's an insect pest called the bronze birch borer, which is kind of common around here. We get that every 3 to 5 years. Bronze birch borer will come in, I'll get a lot of phone calls, and then we just go out with a chainsaw and cure the problem.
Is it worth it to treat for that? I just had an estimate on trimming that tree.
Well,
they put in
the issue with the birch is that the tree might stay alive, mm-hmm. but you can have deadwood hanging up there. And you know how birch bark holds water? Well, it holds the water in. So when the branch dies, it gets rotten until all of a sudden it just kind of goes and it falls off. And they can be pretty hazardous. So if it's in a location where you have a target, then you need to do something with it. If it's not anywhere near where you care about anything, then just let it be. So
I used to have a paper birch that I treated every 2 or 3 years with a systemic insecticide.
Mm-hmm.
And our neighbors, they were replanting trees, and mine was looking great.
Well, that's good. I mean, you know, the systemics will work for some things. I'm not a big fan of them because I'm kind of the field forester, plant them and cut them down when they are sick because you can always grow another one. Okay, now we come into some interesting ones, butternut, and I'm going to put butternut and walnut together because they're both related. They're in the juglans family. Butternut used to be a pretty common species in this part of the state. By the time you get to the Twin Cities, you don't see much butternut north of there. And we had just beautiful butternut down here. When I first came to this region, I started working, I saw butternut like that with 3 16-foot logs in them, and they were just beautiful. And about that time, the butternut decline disease showed up, and you'll be lucky if you can find a healthy butternut anywhere in the region anymore. It is rare, and chances are good that our children may not see it. It's really unfortunate because butternut is sort of like basswood in terms of its carving ability. You know, it in fact, it's a little bit harder than basswood, so it takes a shape better. But it's soft, so you can work it nicely. It's a little oily. It takes finish very well. But to find a good-sized chunk of it anymore, you're really going to have to search. So if you got a piece of butternut, you got something that's really worth something. Cherry. Black cherry, choke cherry, pin cherry. Well, the only one that's worth really talking about is black cherry. And that's a species that we're blessed with. Unfortunately, we're kind of blessed with what I call snaky cherry, because they have a tendency to kind of do that. And cherry is a species that needs to grow out in the open in order for it to grow straight. And when it's growing in the understory, where it's not getting all the sunlight it wants to do this. And it's not a real rot-resistant wood, so you can get woodpecker activity and all of a sudden the top comes out of the cherry. So I've actually cut a lot of cherry for firewood and burned just cords and cords of cherry. It's not a great firewood, but it's better than nothing. It really is a beautiful wood, and it commonly has burls. So you've got something to work with there. Those burls are, like all burls, often with bark inclusions and failures. So you really have to be very careful with it because they'll fall apart on you while you're turning them, I'm sure. But it is a beautiful species, and just excellent wood, just really nice stuff. Cottonwood. Well, it's kind of like popple. They're in the same family. You can get big ones. So if you need big stuff for something, cottonwood, like aspen, is no good in contact with the ground and is not rot resistant at all. So if you get it and you want to use it for something, make sure you keep it under cover, keep it up off the ground. And I'd say use it because, again, they're species that have a lot of water in them. So as they're drying out, they're really struggling to lose that water, and they change shape, and it really is, there's a tremendous amount of moisture in those things. Elm, we have three kinds of elm, or hat, because a lot of it's dying. American elm, rock elm, and slippery elm, or red elm. American elm is the one that you see the most commonly. That's the one that used to be the boulevard tree that grew up and down, you know, everyone's street. That's the ones that get to be, you know, real monsters. Rock elm is a kind of a lowland version of that same species. It's got some characteristics that, you know, you can tell that apart from an American elm, but the wood, you really couldn't tell apart. Now, slippery elm or red elm is a really nice woodworking wood. If you can get some red elm, it's good. You can make a nice project out of it. It's got nice color to the heartwood. A lot of times you'll see them standing dead in the woods. But the sapwood, the bark is off, the sapwood is rotted away. That heartwood is still good 4 or 5 years later. And I've cut trees, and I've had people use it, and it works out nice. It's a real, got kind of a nice red color to it. It's heavy, but, and it's a little tough to work with. You know, the elms have a interlocking bark, and so they can be a little bit of a booger, you know, in terms of sawing it or even drilling it. You have to have sharp tools to work it. Hackberry, which I think I sent the hackberry around.
It's that log you went around.
Yeah. Yep, there it is right there. Hackberry as wood can barely be told apart from American elm. Now, as the wood is very, very similar to it. On the market, you could see hackberry thrown in with the elm just because the market doesn't treat it any differently. Hickory. There you go. There's a chunk. We have two kinds of hickory around here. We have bitternut and shagbark. I'm not sure over here whether or not you guys have much hickory. I have hickory on my place over in kind of western Winona County, but it starts to drop out as you move west. And shagbark is more like eastern Winona County down into Houston County, and then down into Iowa. But the one thing that's interesting about the hickories is the specific gravity. They are heavy. They're probably more BTUs per cord in a cord of hickory than any other wood in the state of Minnesota. It's sawed. You know, the bigger stuff is sawed. It's really interesting wood, and only thing is the bugs will get at it, and it is not rot resistant. So if you're going to saw some or do something with it, you need to keep it under cover, off the ground. You know, I'm kind of a broken record on that, but that's just the way it is. The bugs will eat this stuff up. Let's see. Ironwood, which is pretty common. I'm sure you have ironwood around here. But, you know, probably the biggest one you're ever going to see is going to be about yay big. And it lives up to its name. You better have a sharp saw if you're going to deal with it. It requires extremely sharp tools to work with. And it's much easier to work with when it's green than if it's dry. Because once it's dry, it gets hard. I've never seen anything made. I've seen a few small items made from ironwood, and I know that, for example, loom shuttles are made out of ironwood for these high-speed looms where the shuttle passes back and forth really quickly, because apparently it'll take a polish and it won't snag. But ironwood tends to have a spiraling grain, which makes it real tough to do anything with, because it when you saw it, and then it wants to turn on you as it dries. But it makes good handles, makes excellent firewood, and I'm sure that you could make nice turning projects out of it as well. And you know, most of the times you're talking a small understory tree, the kind of thing that most landowners wouldn't really care if you cut it. Locust. Now, we do have some black locust that was brought in. We don't have a lot of locust around, and that's a good thing because it's kind of an invasive pest. If you get over in the Fish and Wildlife Service lands along the Mississippi, you can find areas that are overgrown with black locust, and it's really invasive over there. But it was planted because it's a nitrogen fixer, and it's fairly rot-resistant wood, so the old-timers thought, well, we'll make fence posts out of it. Now we make fence posts out of pine and treat it with Penton. We don't split them like they used to. Box elder. And I've seen some very nice box elder projects. It's interesting because it does have that kind of pink tinge to the heartwood sometimes. You can find, and most folks will give you box elder, all the box elder you want. So you can get free wood. Most of my box elder goes into my furnace. But there's a place for everything, I guess.
Is it good for turning?
It's not too bad. You know, box elder is a maple. So it's in there with silver maple or red maple in terms of their relative hardness and its ability to take a form. It's not too bad. And because the wood is so white, I think you could dye it or color it nicely. And you can really get some interesting, I've seen some real interesting stuff with that natural color of the box elder. So if you went to a farmer and said, I'll cut your box elder along this fence line, he'd be happy.
Isn't the box elder related to the maple?
Yes, yeah, it's in the same family. It's in the Acer family. So in the maples, you go box elder, silver maple, common yard tree, the great big huge thing that grows, it's commonly found out in the river bottoms, red maple, which is another one kind of a scrubby tree. We see more red maple in Wisconsin, but there are red maple that are kind of crossbred to give us things like Norway maple for our boulevard trees. But the king is really sugar maple. We have sugar maple in this area. It's probably one of the nicer turning woods or hardwoods to work with, in a nice light color, strong, really will hold shapes, you know, nice and sharp. It's a little hard to find good maple because it's kind of been picked over, but I like maple. I think it's a real nice wood to work with, and fortunately there's not a lot of diseases or anything like that, so maple's one to we can have around here.
I hear people talk about hard maple. What is that?
That's sugar maple.
That's sugar maple.
Yep.
Okay. Same thing.
Well, you know, generally you divide the group into sugar maple and then all the other maples. So silver maple, red maple, box elder, and there are others that don't grow around here. And they're all softer. Sometimes people will have a hard time finding good quality sugar maple, and they'll substitute silver maple. And it's maple. And if you don't know what you're looking at, they made some money. The wood business is not always on the up and up, let me tell you. Okay, oaks. We're getting close to being done here. Black oak, bur oak, red oak, white oak, and swamp white oak. And we're blessed with all of those. Bur oak from this area west is the common oak that you'll see. The tree that grows out, the one that withstood the prairie fires, that stood there for 200. Now, if you want to find an old tree, you find an old oak. And it'll be ugly. But, you know, it'll be 400 years old. I mean, especially some of those old bur oaks. They are just wonderful trees. And just have the most character in them. I mean, they're just so knotty and gnarly and twisted. But the figure is just wonderful. And the thing about bur oak is that it tends to be pinny, which means that it'll have clusters of small branches that kind of come out of the bole of the tree. And so to find a clear board without any knots in it is almost impossible. But it's pretty rot resistant. It's hard as nails. It can be pretty, a real challenge to work because the grain in those burly sections just changes direction and really can be hard to work with.
Is the whole tree kind of like a bur oak then?
Oh yeah. Well, they tend to be shorter and stouter. You know, they're growing. I mean, you get this. The classic bur oak is this huge trunk, wide, comes up and then goes wide again, and it's not really all that tall. The bark is really thick, and then the idea is that prairie fire could come through there and burn, and the bark was so thick that it would protect the tree. And so that the prairie fires could go through and keep the grass down, and you'd only have just these few bur oaks. And so you'll have these groves of them scattered around this part of the state that are remnants from 250 years ago. And they don't reproduce real good. They don't grow real fast, but they're really, I think they're just cool trees. Now, and that's in the white oak family, so if you could find a board that was clear, if you wanted to make a barrel out of it, it would hold water, or whiskey, or wine. Because along with that, we have white oak, true white oak. And that's more common in like Fillmore, Houston, Winona, Wabasha. As you start getting north of Wabasha County, the white oak starts to drop out. And as you get over this way, the white oak starts to drop out. White oak is the one species down here that's used for making barrels. And Stegmeyer Stave Mill down in Houston County is the only tight cooperage barrel making place in the whole state, and they sell barrels to the whiskey trade down south and to the Europeans to put wine in. So I think it's pretty valuable. But the tight cooperage refers to the ability of the barrel to hold a liquid. So you can use those two species. The one other that goes with it is swamp white oak, which is not a real common tree. It'll be found in the bottoms of the Mississippi River Valley and some of the adjacent trips. I've seen some pretty big ones, you know, yay big.
We're starting to make that a tree available.
Yep.
Planting.
Yep. One of the nice things about swamp white oak is that it, like so many bottomland species, the roots tend to go down shallow and then spread out. So it makes a good boulevard tree in an urban situation where the roots can't go down because the soil is crap. And so you're seeing more and more of it. And it also has a good wildlife component because lots of things like to eat the acorns. But like bur oak, the swamp white oak tends to be pinny. And so you'll commonly find that you can't find a clear cutting. You know, it's just not there. And the other ones are black oak and red oak. And those are in the other family in the oaks, which is the red oak family. They tend to be straighter green. Black oak is kind of a poor cousin of red oak. It retains its branches, so it tends to be knottier. I burn a lot of it. It's also related to the pin oak that you would find up in Anoka County, up in that country, which is kind of poor stuff. And we sell a lot of red oak in Minnesota. It's an excellent species, and it should turn nice. I think it's a pretty good species to work with.
That would be working too.
Yes. Yeah, I've used plenty of red oak. And then last but not least is willow. And I've sold willow, mostly end up making paper out of it. And I really don't know that I would want to try and make something out of it, but I suppose a guy could try. It's mostly water. Anyway, that's the species that we have around here. I did want to show a couple of things. I brought this Trees and Shrubs of Minnesota by Welby Smith, and I'll pass it around here. You can take a look at it. This is the Bible for trees and shrubs in Minnesota. It's a relatively new book. It's only been out about, let's see, when did he publish it? 2008. So about 6 years ago, I actually know the guy. He did an excellent job. If you got any little thing that you don't recognize, this is the book to look it up in.
You had mentioned that several species of trees have been gone, basically. Like, say, green ash added to that list. A couple other ones. Anything being done to restore them trees here?
Yes and no. First of all, natural predators or natural problems tend to kill stuff off to a certain point. And then where the disease or the insect can't move around because all the targets are gone, then it tends to back off. So even though we had Dutch elm disease here in the 70s, we still have lots of elm around. And there are these elm in isolated pockets. So, you know, I don't expect that emerald ash borer will kill all the ash. There's just too much ash out there. What it'll do is that ash will become rare. So, butternut. And a lot of it depends on the method of reproduction of the tree. So, for example, butternut is a nut. It's a gravity seeder or something has to be moved around by a critter like a squirrel. And those don't disperse very quickly. Whereas airborne, like elm seeds, for example, which are just a little dinky seed with a little sail around it, can travel for a few miles. And so those tend to disperse more quickly. And so, you know, I've anticipate that butternut will become pretty darn rare. Now they are working on, Forest Service has got some research going on, but the amount of money that goes into research on wood is pretty minuscule compared to what Monsanto puts into corn. And, you know, because Forest Service has got a lot on its plate, they don't have money to do all the things that they would like to do. Right now, one of the big deals is mountain pine beetle. If you go out west, and you drive through South Dakota or Montana, and you look up on the hillside and you see these big swaths of dead and drying trees, that's mountain pine beetle. And it's killing all that lodgepole pine. And they got a lot to deal with on that front right there. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, they'll kill stuff off to a certain point. Another thing is that they are starting to do this natural predator type control now. And I view those approaches as being pretty useful. I've seen places where that sort of thing has worked pretty well. So, you know, there's hope.
Hedge. Hedge.
Yeah?
The old fence post. The tree that they call hedge. Or it's Osage orange.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, that
you don't
is.
See hardly that up here. It's going to Iowa and you can find it.
Yeah, down from about the middle of Iowa on south, because that's a southern species. Missouri, Arkansas, you know. It'll have the hedge balls, which is a kind of a weird fruit. And, you know, it's just not something I'm familiar with.
Well, you didn't even mention that to ironwood. It's about the same as ironwood. You wear your saw in the
water. Oh, yeah. Now. Well, some of those understory species are pretty cool. There's a couple more that I wanted to show you. This book here by Hoadley on understanding wood is in your library, and it's really good. There's tables in here that talk about the movement, you know, how things will move radially or tangentially, about the specific gravity, and, you know, so you can look up the wood that you think it might be and get an idea of what some of the characteristics are. So this is really an excellent one. The other one is identifying wood. And I was a little disappointed with this, but it is, if you want to go to the trouble of microscopy or cutting sections, you can identify a block of wood because they'll have characteristic photos in here. And so this is another pretty good one. I don't know if you have it in your library or not. But this is a pretty good one.
Who's the author on that?
Hoadley.
Hoadley?
On both of these. He's a very knowledgeable wood technologist. I think he's from Madison. They have a big wood technology laboratory in Madison. So that's all I got.
Okay. Quick question. I don't know if you covered cottonwood.
Yes.
Okay, but my daughter has one that must be 60 or 80 feet tall.
Oh, sure.
House.
Yeah, they get huge.
Are they strong, sturdy, reliable, or?
No. Okay. Cottonwood is in the populus family, so it's the same as aspen. And the wood is brittle, and the trees get very large. So old ones tend to shed big limbs, and it tends to be rotten sometimes. So that answers your question.
Yep.
How bad is the European buckbark hurting our forests?
Well, in a lot of places, what it's doing is it's replacing the natural regeneration of the desirable species that we would like to see. So you go into, like, go down to Quarry Hill Park, and it's just a jungle. You don't get any sunlight, and it's all little buckthorn on the ground. And in that, at one time, was a bur oak woods, and you can still find some of those bur oak, but they're just being choked out. You will not find an oak seedling, because the shade from the buckthorn is just taken over.
But they've been working on that, haven't they?
They cut a bunch of it out.
Yeah, well, the thing with buckthorn control is that it's not a one-shot deal.
Right.
You can start out, and let's see here. Let's look at our... what was this one?